Well, welcome, guys, to it. This has got to be the best topic in the world, right?
Fantastic. Mm-hmm.
And the hardest topic. Parents of teens. Jen, first of all, you've worked in schools for over 35 years, most recently in the role as the head of secondary school in a Christian co-educational school. You're a mum of three adult children, and you've worked with and supported countless parents in navigating the teen years with their children. You got grandkids? No.
Yes,
six. I should never ask that. Oh.
Six grandchildren. Oh, too, and loving it.
You're too young for grandchildren.
Oh, thanks, awesome. Peter. I appreciate that.
So, Mr. Chol, thanks for covering me, Pete. Dr. Peter Downey, author, educator, father of three adult children, principal of Oxford Falls Grammar Fabulous School, author on topics of parenting, marriage, and faith. Yes. You have written on parenting issues for a number of magazines and newspapers, and you've appeared on numerous podcasts and TV programs. I wonder what I've been doing with my time.
You've got kids.
Yes, I do have kids. I have three kids.
In our work.
21, 18, 16. So mine are a bit younger than you guys. So I'm still kind of in the middle. You've got grandkids as well, too?
Three grandchildren. I'm not as prolific as Jen here, but three. Yeah. So one's about a month old, and a year and a half, and a 1 year old.
Yeah.
So it keeps us busy and reminds us what it's like. It's a busy time having children.
It's interesting because you guys have written books, you've done articles, you've done podcasts, and you talk about this stuff all the time. Talking about it and living it are two totally different things, aren't they?
Yeah, because you can appear, when you're writing about something, you can appear like an expert.
Yeah.
And my kids both find that hilarious and inaccurate because they get to see us as a, you know, when you're writing about something, it's all very clinical and it's very clean and it's often, you know, quite well laid out. But life is messy. Yeah. And so they get to see me in my pajamas and when I'm not in a good frame of mind and when I fail and when I don't, when things don't go so well. But that's okay. That's all part of life. It's all part of parenting.
Yeah. Have you learned a lot from failures, Jen?
Oh, my gosh. I'll share a few stories about failures. Yes. I think that's part of it. And we have to just accept that we all learn through failures, adults and teens. Mm. So we have to sometimes allow them to fail and not always rescue them, but allow them to fail so that they can learn and grow. One of my kids said to me, please just let me make my own mistakes. I'm like, oh, okay, I don't know how I feel about that.
But I can fix it for you before you.
Yes, and I understand the principle, but also as a parent, you want to protect them and help them to make healthy choices rather than just making drastic mistakes along the way.
All right, let's start. I've got a bunch of questions here that are going to lead us in a direction. We'll just see where it goes. First of all, how to create a healthy home or a healthy family life with open communication. I love these questions that come in. It's almost like how to create the perfect home.
Okay.
How to be the perfect parent. You've got to start early.
But also I suppose the first thing is recognise that's not going to happen.
Good. Hey, well, that wraps it up today. Thanks for joining.
I think it's important, like if you think about a sports team or an athlete, they will have a goal and an aim and a vision, if you like, almost a vision of what do I want my family to be like? Mm-hmm. What do I want my children to be like? What kind of people do I want my children to be like when they're 10, when they're 15, when they're 20, when they're 30? What kind of adults do I want them to be? And then the next question is, what am I doing to encourage that? Now, we're not Dr. Frankenstein, sort of, you know, we impact and we mold our children, but it's not just a sum game where we can just mold them exactly as we want. So it's not, you know, you can never be perfect, but it's all about starting early.
Yeah.
And you start, and I think, Jen, it was you that came up with a great phrase when we were chatting before about, you know, start parenting teens when they're babies.
It's true, right?
You don't turn on the switch when they're 15. You don't kind of just like parachute in suddenly and go, okay, let's have some rules and regulations and let's start communicating because your kids are looking and go, who are you?
Yeah, so
you've
got
to start early. Mm. I often refer back to, and I liked the, there's a bit of a thing in psychology about the four different parenting styles, which I often think about, and I'll just unpack it just briefly. But it's basically on two axes, and it's based on the work of Dona Baumrind. And on one axis is warmth or relationship or sort of affection, and on the other is control and demand.
Okay.
And so if you're high control, high demand, but low warmth, then that's the drill sergeant dad, the matron mother, the Mrs. Trunchpole from Matilda.
Yeah,
children are seen and not heard. I'm in charge. Give me your phone. You're not going to that party.
Okay.
Sit over, you know, they're totally in control, but the children grow up. They don't get a chance to grow up and thrive.
Right.
The opposite to that is high warmth, But low demand, low control, okay. That's the permissive parent. And they bring their toddler to your house who's now smashing things and they shrug and go, oh, what can you do?
Boys.
Or, you know, they won't go to bed at night. The parents right. just, oh, you're right, darling. You know, do whatever you want. You want your phone in your bedroom at midnight? Don't worry, that's fine. Yeah, that's right. The permissive parent. Mm. And those kids are wild. The worst one, obviously, is the neglectful parent, which is low on both of those counts. There's no boundaries in the home. There's no rules. Mm. But there's no love and affection. There's no agency that the children have. Mm. And that's obviously a highly dysfunctional home and that will breed highly dysfunctional children for the large part.
Yeah.
So what you actually want is high control demand and high warmth. And that's the authoritative parent, not the authoritarian parent. But that's I refer to it as sort of the strong hand or the strong arm with the soft touch.
Yeah.
And that's where there are boundaries in our home. Mm. We do have rules. We have understandings about the way we relate to each other. I have high expectations for you, and here's what the expectations are. But you're also affectionate and warm and engaged with your children and giving them agency. Mm. You're not actually cutting them out and just so they're actually able to contribute to the conversation. Now, that's the healthy quarter that you want to head towards. So being an authoritative parent sounds a bit hard, but that's what you want. It's that perfect blend. Well, although it's not going to be perfect, we're all going to have the days where we drift into those other quadrants.
We do.
You drift and then you sort of come back.
Yeah. Yep.
But that's the main aim, and that's where the sweet spot, I think, generally.
What do you drift into, Jen? Are you
good question.
Part of, or are you?
I waver.
Do you?
It depends on the circumstance.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember a situation where I desperately wanted to be just a warm, caring parent.
Yeah.
And I went completely the opposite and just blasted and just said, what were you thinking? And these poor kids, my poor kid, whose brain is not fully developed yet, the prefrontal cortex took a lot more years to actually fully develop.
Right.
And my what were you thinking was just a stupid question. Teenagers really struggle with thinking about consequences and logic and responsibilities and that sort of thing. So I drifted between the two, but really quickly turned to apologise because I think that's part of having a good relationship with your kids. I think you said Pete start early and I would agree. Babies, absolutely, values, establish the values. Husband and wife, mums and dads, parents, whoever's parenting the kids need to be on the same page because you don't want to have one person saying one thing and somebody else saying the other because they'll go to the person who's going to give them the answer that they want.
Yes.
So you do need to agree and have a common front.
I often say that mum and dad are kind of like the earth and the children are the moon, which kind of circle. But the earth is the anchor.
Yeah.
But if you flip it around and you put the children at the center of gravity, then the whole universe gets out of whack.
That's great.
Yes.
And there's astronomical disaster on a large scale.
Yeah. So talking about the warmth and the love and then talking about bringing the hammer down a little bit, putting in clear-cut boundaries, does it depend on the child a bit as to how you do it, or do you just do it your way?
It sounds, when you say do it your way, very much you're doing it to them. We work together as a family, and I think you establish your values as a family, and that can be together. You can talk about together as well. This is what we value and this is why we value it.
Yeah.
But it does depend on how you handle it with each child. Every child is different.
Absolutely.
And the way you communicate with every child may be different as well.
Yeah.
Some are really happy to sit down across the table and have a chat.
Yeah.
Others will sit in the car with you and be fine because you're not looking them in the eye.
Yeah.
Another one, you might need to sit in the bedroom at night when the lights are off and sit on the floor and just chat.
Yeah.
Or with another, you might want to send text messages and say, hey, you know that conversation we had? Can we finish it later?
Yeah, great.
Or can we do this? Or leave notes.
Yeah.
But always encouraging. I think that we can tend to, as parents, take our role so seriously and that we need to fix this. Mm. But our role is to love and to encourage them and to help them grow into healthy adults as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that is encourage them whenever we can. So I think part of that is you see something great that they've done, and I'm not talking about good test results and a great soccer goal. Mm. It's the values that you want to encourage. What values are they demonstrating that speaks about who you are as a family?
Mm. I love that. I was watching my son play football when he was about 7, and one of the dads worked for Football Australia. He was like a senior coach, and his son was playing too. And at halftime, all the parents were telling the kids, don't do that, don't do that, you should be doing this, do that, run harder and all that. And he said to me just quietly, he said, Imagine if we didn't give them any advice on that whatsoever. He said, imagine if we just chose one thing that they did in that game where they ran hard or kicked a goal or kicked it hard, and we just went, man, that was amazing when you did that. And he said this great thing. He said, what about if we just celebrated what we want to see more of?
Yeah.
And I said, that's gold. And I'm writing it down on my phone. And he said, what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
And it always stuck in my head as something that I've always tried to do. And, you know, with football, yes, but with life to see what, gee, that was a cracker when you did that.
And if you want to cheer them on, sorry, you do want to cheer them on with your goals and the great test results.
Yes.
But the things you really want to build into them are the values that you see.
Great.
Sorry, Peter.
No. What I was going to say is that you're actually doing that all throughout their life, because if you think about it, particularly those very formative years when they're before 18.
Yes.
A baby, a newborn baby, has no agency. It has no capacity to do anything by itself.
Yeah.
It's totally dependent. An 18-year-old, you're hoping, has now been well-educated, well-rounded, has kind of, you know, is emotionally, socially, spiritually, physically, they've matured. They've still got a long way to go in adulthood.
Yeah.
But you hope that they can act independently. And what you're actually doing on that journey when you're talking about sort of encouraging and saying, hey, that was good, I think that's a really great skill in negotiating with your kids some of the rules and boundaries, because if the rules and boundaries around things like social media or phones or parties or friendship or all sorts of things will be different for an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old. So as parents, we're constantly shifting into the new territory. You can never kind of say, okay, we've got everything set up now, this is the way we're going to do it.
Yes.
Because your children will remain 6 years old forever.
Yeah.
So you're constantly going into that. Even if you think about something as silly or as inconsequential as changing their bedtimes as they get older. But that's a reflection of how rules have to change. And I think if children are doing things well, like if they've gone to a party and they've managed a situation, you can say, that was really great the way you managed
that.
And that helps me to trust you more.
Yeah, I love that.
And that means that we can extend that a little bit further. And that's the way you kind of stretch. You're constantly stretching and growing and changing as they go through. And even through to, we've got, children in their late 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
And the relationship we have with them is still changing as they become parents themselves. Yeah. So it's a constant lifelong journey.
Okay, I'll throw a doozy in. You ready?
Okay.
Jen, I'll throw it to you.
Right.
Grenade. Here it comes. Jen.
You're watching this at home, sitting on your computer watching this.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, my son, my daughter's around 15, 16. I've done an awful job up till here. And my child is not having a cracker. Is it too late? Because we were talking about, getting early. Can you still make a difference to
me? It's not too late. It does help when you've developed good relationships with them when they're younger.
Yeah.
If your communication with them and that the way that they are relating with you is good, that's great because you can talk through all the issues. But if they're out there doing crazy stuff, it's time to really still parent. You don't give up. We don't just say, sorry, left it too late. Not too late. Never too late. So there's always opportunities. And sometimes you might use a marker as something to say, hey, now that you're 15 or now that you can use an excuse for changing the way things are going to happen at home. Hey, we just got back from a holiday. You know what? Things are going to be a little bit different from now on and really change the way you relate to them in talking about what their concerns are, what your concerns are. So if they're not doing well in certain areas, and you say, this area in your life, we've had a bit of a break, we had a little bit of a look at what's happening. I really want to help you navigate your adult years in the future, and we need to start now.
Yeah, great.
Because it's only going to get harder.
Yeah, but also I'd say, it's really rare for, and sometimes as parents we can be hard on ourselves, and sometimes we need that, and sometimes we deserve it.
Yeah, true.
But I've rarely met a parent who's really just stuffed it up totally, like a total disaster.
Okay.
I mean, some parents might have a bit of a rough journey.
They might think they have.
Yeah, that's right. Because they also need to sort of celebrate the good things and maybe not be too hard on themselves.
Yeah.
But also, if we're talking about starting when you're 15, then you'd have to certainly build up kind of slowly. In the same way, if you could imagine a parallel story might be, for example, if a family is split up, the parents are divorced, and one of the parents remarries, and now there's a new adult that comes into the home. Now, if that adult parachutes into the home and on day one spreads out and says, right, here's the new letter of the law, yeah. That's not going to go well with the 15-year-old who's going to get their back up.
Yeah.
So they've got to build. They've got to build the relationship and the trust, and that takes a bit of time.
So could I stretch this enough to say, give me a couple of things that you would do if you feel like your child's out of control around 16 and you feel like you've lost total control and you maybe they're hanging out with people you don't want them hanging out with, doing stuff you don't want them doing. And you feel like I've got no influence.
So where to start?
Just with a little.
Well, you'd always start with, I guess, and I'm just taking a shot here with communication.
Yeah.
And sort of saying, and articulating what the concerns are.
Yeah. Okay.
These are my concerns. You're trying to give them that agency of involving them, as opposed to I'm locking you in your bedroom and I've hidden your phone. I've cut the Wi-Fi wires. Mm. So it could be concerns around the use of social media or something, and you have to start somewhere by articulating the concerns and saying, look, these are the boundaries that we really need to put in place. Now, sometimes children will respond, and sometimes they might not. And a terrible situation is a child, they have, you know, they're old enough to have the agency to go totally rogue and be climbing out of bedroom windows and heading off. It's rare, but, you know, you can have these situations where young people just go totally off. And you know, I know situations where parents have said, okay, look, this is actually not working. You're going to need to stay somewhere else, you know, if we keep going. I mean, that's a really serious kind of issue we're talking about. But I think it begins with communication and articulating boundaries by having consequences.
Yeah.
And but like I said, if you've started early, then the journey is relatively easy. And I think most people do start early.
Yeah.
I think it's very hard to just jump in, as Peter was saying. I think it's very hard to jump in. But maybe you choose one thing.
Yeah.
Because if it's really out of control, then you just look and say, okay, what is one thing we can work on right now?
Great.
Just start small and then have a win and celebrate the win.
Yeah.
And then the next thing comes along.
You said before when we were chatting to Jen, I said you must come across, you're the head of secondary school.
Yes, I was, yeah.
And you must come across some interesting characters with teens. Mm-hmm. And I said, do you love some of them? You said you love all of them.
Love them, because if we really look closely, and sometimes we have to look really closely, there is something in every kid we can celebrate.
Yep.
So you might have this really strong-willed girl within your family, perhaps, or within your school community, and you've got to say, don't you want your young girl, your young woman, to be strong-willed?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You don't want somebody who's going to be a pushover.
Yeah.
You want somebody who can actually stand up for themselves. And you look for the positives, celebrate that.
Yeah.
So we look for the positives in everyone. And there is positives in every teen. They're navigating the hardest time of life. Would you go back to being a teenager again?
No way.
Would you like to be a teenager again?
No, and I think it'd be hard. I was a teenager in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
I think there's a lot more challenges, a lot more interesting
today.
Absolutely. But also it's interesting what you're saying, Jen, because we were talking before about that idea of having a vision.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've always felt is having a vision for students. And I don't see them as little kids. I'll look at a kindergarten child and say, they will graduate. Kids who are in kindergarten now will graduate in the mid-2030s.
Yeah.
In 2045, they're going to be in their mid-20s.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm now working, I now have still have contact with the first students I ever taught who are approaching 50.
Wow, that's so good.
And I have a vision for all these people, not stuck in the age they are now, but as adults.
Yeah.
And you see, and particularly for some children, school's kind of not really their thing, and or they might not like the strictness of, you know, haircut regulations and homework and the rigidity of bells, and they might find the subject boring, but they leave school and they find their business or their trade or their tribe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And suddenly you meet these people when they're 25 and 30, you know, bump into them in a pub or on the street or something like that, and they're always, and you see them as adults and you think, I remember, and you'll often tell a story, oh, remember, you know, there's even some guys I still hang out with. Now, and I say, you remember when I suspended you from school?
Right.
So we have those sorts of stories.
Wow.
So having that vision for them as, you know, what they'll be like in the future.
I think that's really important, even from babies, to have that picture in mind when you're planning and setting up your family from babies and really establishing values and routines and, I guess, rules, even as young people.
Yeah.
But to establish that really young and do things together as a family and become very family orientated, I think that makes a big difference as well. With our young people, I don't know if I've gone off track, but
it's great.
Thinking about that and thinking it starts when they're little.
Yep.
It starts with things like family meals, and even if it has to be breakfast, if you can't fit in dinners because of your busy, you know, planning of your extracurricular activities or whatever.
Yeah.
I had a very close family of friends who had breakfast together every day because
wow.
Dad was a chef, so he wasn't home for nighttime.
Yeah,
dinners.
Right. Yeah.
We used to go out to breakfast. It cost a little bit of money, but breakfast is cheaper than dinner. Just
yes.
on a
yeah.
little
oh,
tip
good
there.
Depends.
We'd go, oh, depends, okay. We would go out for breakfast of a weekend, and that was our way of gathering together as a family, as an alternate to family dinners if we couldn't quite manage it.
Yeah.
But I think establishing that connection as a family as well, and that communication you talked about before,
yeah.
Peter, is so important
yeah.
because once you can talk about, jumping back to the 15-year-old,
yeah.
once you can talk about things, and if you've got great memories of having had good conversations with your kids and they
yeah.
know you've had those
yeah.
good conversations and you've got that foundational,
yeah.
then you're able to jump back into those conversations. Even if the 15-year-old, you'd talk and laugh about a funny story that happened when they were kids.
Yes.
And if you're needing to find that connection with them again, there's lots of ways of doing that.
And it's also really helpful. I mean, one of the things that is over all of this, we must never underestimate the value and the importance of role modelling
yes.
for our children.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult, for example, to be trying to institute social media rules in the home
yeah.
if you're at the dinner table yourself
mm-hmm.
going, oh, this is important, this is a business thing, I've got to take
yeah,
this. Put your phone away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
But I'll have mine,
nah, nah.
or whether it's our consumption of alcohol, or it's the role modelling of the way mum and dad speak to
yes,
each other,
yes, yes.
or the way they respect each other, or,
yeah.
or show respect and
yeah.
love and care in the home. That role modelling is so important. It's really hard to say to a child or a teenager, don't do that, and they just look at you like, yeah, but
no,
but,
they listen to more of what you do
yeah,
than what you
right.
say.
That's right.
So they take all of that in.
And
yeah.
this is. Been really a front of my mind as I've got these new grandsons, toddlers and sort of babies. And I've just noticed how they're absolutely obsessed with the mobile phone.
Wow, already?
And they'll just pick up anything or pick up a Lego brick and put it to their hand and all this sort of stuff. And you realise they must see us a lot.
Mm. Like that.
Doing this. And you can see the appeal of it. You know,
yeah.
They're copying what we're
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so even now at this early stage, my grandsons stay with us. We have them stay with us a couple of times a week, which is lovely. But they'll sit at the dinner table with us in the high chair. And even at this stage, though they're throwing food on the floor, they are learning and
yeah,
watching how
right.
we eat together.
Wow, that's
and,
right.
And in our family, we say grace, for example.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
even doing that, we don't make a big deal out of it. It's just natural. That's
yeah.
what we
yeah.
do. But they are learning that. They are learning that we, the adults, we eat with knives and forks. Now, they've kind of managed that school with a little plastic
yeah,
spoon.
Sure.
Most of the food goes on the floor.
Yeah.
Some of it goes in the hair. Some of it goes in
yeah,
the mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
But they,
that's right.
day by day,
yeah.
they are watching the dynamic and the way we're all sitting
yeah.
in this space doing this thing.
Yeah.
And it's a good reflection of life.
Yeah.
And there are so many great things you can do around the dinner table from little as well.
Yeah.
I think that apart from telling funny stories, I remember asking my kids for their advice.
Yeah, it's
great. And
they
just loved it because they felt like what they thought mattered.
Yeah.
So it might have just been something random or it could have been something more serious, but it helps to start a conversation. So I remember saying things like, I was driving today and this guy came up behind me and he was overtaking and I really wanted to do this. Should I have, you know, that, even things like that. Or more serious things along the lines of, oh gosh, you know, I heard on the news about this thing that's happening and how do you feel about that? What would you think if that happened to you? And really bringing in, I guess, stories, personal, or asking their advice, because they're learning from each other as well.
Although it can backfire.
Because you got a good story?
My girls now are totally free to give me fashion advice.
Oh.
So sometimes they'll be over and I'm heading out to
it's
a function or something.
Well.
Thank you. Thank you.
Right.
A good role model. But I'll sort of walk out and one of my daughters will go,
it's a no.
No.
Oh,
so, but wouldn't you rather know, Peter, before you
I would. I do appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I actually listen to them.
Yes.
I listen to their advice. They go, Dad, you can't.
Yeah.
It's check your stripy tie with a check shirt. It's not on. You don't
wow.
do it.
Yeah.
But do you know what's interesting?
Yeah.
Teens giving advice.
Yes.
They're telling us about what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
They're telling us about where they're at with their thinking.
Yeah.
It gives us the opportunity to be curious.
Yes.
And to listen without judgment.
It's great.
Because if we listen and judge and go, oh, you're kidding, you wouldn't really do that, would you?
Yes.
Oh, that's terrible. No. We want to be encouraging our kids. We want to be building them in making decisions for themselves. And this is just, like, in some respect, role playing what they may then do in the future.
You know where that's really important, of course, is that I didn't grow up in my kids' shoes. Mm. Do you know what I mean? They, the things that they were encountering, I didn't live through. I was not a teenager with a mobile phone.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that's like. As an adult, I can kind of view it.
Yeah.
And as an educator, we have rules and regulations. But that's not my lived experience. Yeah. I have lived experience around what it's like to play sport and to have friends and to go to parties.
Yeah.
But the social media thing, for example, I haven't lived. So I don't know what that's like. Or even things like, you know, the rise of artificial intelligence. There's all this talk at the moment about AI. And it's just not with, I mean, we're wrestling with it. But teenagers are just in it already. Yeah. So we're using that. For example, we're using teenagers to say, tell us how you are using AI.
Yeah.
Tell us how you think it could be used or should be used. What are the dangers?
Yeah,
what are the uses? Rather than me as an older, you know, as a school principal just kind of going, banned. You know, authoritarian. I've got to be authoritative.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Do you know, it's great. I love talking about dinner table and having the conversations. And I was asking my son about it, saying, what do you like about, you know, those conversations? You know, because it can be a parent thing of saying, how was your day? And he said,
yeah,
it's the worst. And he was saying, he said, I hate it when I hear, not with us, obviously, because we parent perfectly, but with other parents, how was your day? Because it can sometimes feel like you're looking for something wrong.
Yeah.
Like, how was your day? And you're going to get a little comment from a parent that's going to say, couldn't you have done that better? Yeah. Couldn't you have done that? And he said, I love it when it's like we can just talk about your day and there's never going to be a comment that goes, you should have done that.
That's different. Right.
It's just
no judgment. Bleh. No judgment.
None at all. And I think that is so incredibly healthy and
that's
so wonderful.
That's the listening. You know, talk about God giving us two ears and one mouth.
Yes.
We just need to practice that in our parenting as well.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is the more we listen to them, the more we understand them.
Yeah.
And then we work out how we best communicate with them if they're are on a track that we're not so sure about, but just by asking the right questions.
It is, isn't it?
But the dinner table needs to be protected.
Yeah,
it's got to be fun, sacred. Yeah, I love it. Sacred, fun.
Yeah.
It's not time to talk about chores.
Yeah.
It's not time to lecture about anything.
Yeah.
I learned quickly that the car trip also isn't time to do that.
Yeah.
My kids referred to it after a few car trips and when one of my kids decided they'd rather walk, catch a crowded school bus to school and not even get a seat rather than coming in the car because they go, Mum, you're asking the 20 questions. I'm like, what? You get in the car and just ask questions.
Oh, no.
So 20 questions is don't do that. So just, and often it's just about being silent. I find it a bit hard to be silent, but sometimes.
And it's a good opportunity too, because I think there's a thing in some, you know, psychological texts or things I've come across in the past where it's difficult sometimes to talk face-to-face with somebody across the dinner table face-to-face.
Yeah.
But in a car, you're side-by-side. Right. Yeah. There's not that
eye contact.
So if you can just zip it, after a while the mind starts drifting and you hope the conversation flows naturally.
And test it because it works. It's magic.
Yeah.
They do that. And that's the same when I said before about sitting in a dark bedroom on the floor while they're in bed as they're going to sleep.
See, that's a good one too.
Because there's Well, it's just that you don't. No, not sneaking in. You're having a conversation with them. We're not creepy.
Oh, you don't sneak in while they're half asleep.
You're not crawling in. Things.
No, you just go and sit on the floor and just
say,
How was
your day?
Two things I've learned. I'm going to throw these down. And I'm not half as experienced as you guys. But this is what I've learned through constant failure. Is with those conversations around the table. One, never overreact. It could be like milk going up. My dad used to, if you spilt milk at the table, my dad, Scottish dad, he turned into Billy Connolly. He's like, it was like you'd set off a grenade in the kitchen. And it's a good test for me to when someone knocks over water, go, that's just water, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And keep on chatting. And on the inside, you're going, get it before it hits the floor.
You've moved into the permissive zone.
Yes.
and then you're going to come back.
The floor. And so that, and never overreacting about what they say or what they've done. And the other side of that, which kind of ties in, is never judge their friends. And I realise this, especially with my daughters, that talk about a friend that they hate now and they're the worst person in the world and I never want to talk to them because tomorrow they'll love them again.
Yeah.
And I've always come out with, I never liked them anyway.
No, don't get on the bandwagon.
So never overreact. Just
listen.
Like,
just keep listening.
I bet they're a great person. They're doing their best.
Yeah.
It's so, it's simple, but it's, even if you're feeling the opposite on the inside to just...
And friendships are really important because you can come across people that you just think, I'm so glad my kid's a friend with that person.
Yes.
Or then you go, oh my, what are they thinking? thinking. Yeah, I talk about it with my kids and talk about by saying, you know, different people, are they good friends? In that, are they good for you?
Yeah.
Is that bringing out the good in you, this particular friendship? Or is it perhaps taking you along a path that isn't really who they are, they want to be?
Can you control their friendships or not?
A bit.
Yeah.
A bit, I think. And you've, it's rocky territory because you can't parachute into school and work out who they're playing handball with. Obviously, when they're little and you're organising play dates and things like that. And it's, I mean, I think you've got to give the kids the leeway. They have to experience what it's like to encounter a range of different people. And they will learn. They have to learn to be astute in their own choices about who are people who are good for me. And I often challenge students to say, you know, when they're thinking about friendships or things, you know, about, are they wise decision makers? Are they, are they helping you or are they hindering you? Is it bringing, are they bringing joy? And it doesn't mean they're just happy and wonderful all the time, but they've got your back. They're not the kind of people who are going to, you know, what are they doing on social media? You know, and I think kids have got a pretty good alarm bell. They see some things, or students are doing things on, kids are doing things on the weekends, and they've got that sort of little bell, and they kind of go,
trust your gut.
And that's why they sort of can change friends.
I think it's okay too if they have a sense of someone's not quite right. It's actually okay to find another friend and to have a wide group of friends.
Yeah.
Kids, teens need friends at school, youth group, social, sports, family friends as well. And if things aren't going well in one group, then they've got other people they can fall back on. Yeah. So they're not then feeling like, I have no friends. Mm. So it might be a bit tough in one area, but they've got people in their world as well. Yeah. And we can encourage that.
Yeah.
You're talking about choosing your friends. I mean, I know that from the age of when they start high school probably, you really want them to form good friends in high school because they're the ones who go through school with them. And it's great if you can become friendly with their parents as well. Imagine doing camping trips with your kids' friends, families and that sort of thing, because then you're bonding together. It's still family, but it's still friends as well.
Yeah,
and then when the parties come and you need to phone Mrs. So-and-so because they're running a party and you need to ask questions, and as parents, as responsible parents, we do. We get on the phone when we hear about a party and we ask about alcohol and drugs and supervision.
You do
and
that? That? You ring up and you ask
those
questions?
Yes, it's awkward.
Yeah, it is
so
awkward.
It's so uncomfortable and your kids hate it.
Yeah.
And they, but they, we've got to do our job. We're their parents and we love them and care for them, need to keep them safe.
And all the other parents are doing the same thing. They're sort of like, oh, I don't know, I'm a bit uncertain about
this. True.
But, I don't want to be the odd one out. I just say, be the odd one out.
Really?
Trust your gut. Yep, absolutely, go for it.
And, if, and if your kids say, no one else's parents are calling,
Or all the other parents let their kids insert here, whatever it happens to be, some kind of loosey-goosey thing that your child is trying to convince you about that's totally normal.
Yeah.
For the large part, all the other parents are pulling their hair out going, oh.
Yeah, it's true too, isn't it?
Not too sure about this.
Parents together having the conversations and navigating the teen years together, so powerful.
Yes. Yeah.
And families then doing that together as
It's true, isn't
Because
it?
If you have common values in your own family and then in your wider social group as well, it's much easier to let your friend, your child go and have a sleepover at so-and-so's house because you know the family.
And you know and you know what they're about, and you've spent time with them, and you know that the parents are going to be on the job.
That's right.
That they are going to be that authoritative parent, and then it's not going to be like, you know, when your daughter comes home and she says, oh, we didn't go to sleep till 5 o'clock in the morning because we watched videos and jumped in the pool, and you go, you're only 10. Not so keen on that.
I don't want to alarm anyone, but it actually sounds like quite a bit of work, this parenting.
Oh, you know what? Absolutely the hardest work you will ever do.
Yeah.
When my daughter had a baby a little while ago, she just said to me, I read everything, I listened to podcasts, I thought I was prepared, but she said it's so much harder than I thought, and this is a baby.
Wow. I want to get top tips from you guys in a minute. I just want to ask a couple of, got a couple of doozies. Can we ask about a couple of doozies?
Sure, so ask Jen.
Jen, so
Jen.
And I will...
Yeah, bounce to me.
Okay, can we touch on bullying?
Yeah.
If you feel like your child's been bullied.
Yeah.
And if you think they are, what do you do about it?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's really interesting because bullying is a term that's bandied around.
Yeah.
Mm. Often for all sorts of behaviours, and Peter and I were talking about this earlier, we sometimes see kids who are doing thoughtless things.
Thoughtless.
Or mean things.
Yeah, right.
Or silly things that may make somebody else feel uncomfortable.
Or yep. Unkind. Mm.
But bullying is a really heavy term. Mm. Bullying is something that is really ongoing, intentional, wanting to harm.
Okay, that power imbalance too. Power somebody imbalance. Who's got power over
yep.
you.
Got it. Intimidative.
Yeah.
Is that the right word?
Yes.
Yeah.
Intimidatory.
Didn't quite say it quite right, but you know what I mean.
You
know.
If you guys don't know, I've got no idea.
We know what we mean.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, if it is genuine bullying, then yep. that's when we as parents need to help our kids navigate this. Because sadly, bullying doesn't stop in the playground.
Yeah, well.
We will sometimes come across adults who bully.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's true. We want to help our young people learn how to navigate and work with and deal with people who are bullies.
Yes, because it's complex. I think probably the most, in my experience,
yep.
the most common form of bullying tends to be verbal, tends to be meanness, mean words and putting people down. And then lesser so perhaps social bullying, exclusion. Mm. Yep. But I mean, then again, it's okay for, you know, a child not to want to play with that other child. Mm. You know, they just don't want to play with them. That's kind of okay.
Yeah, right.
Physical bullying, of course, which is horrible. But the emerging thing and the emergent thing is, of course, cyberbullying. And that's insidious because of its 24/7 nature.
Yeah.
And that's where we really need to wade in. You don't want your child lying in bed with a phone under the covers reading all these nasty texts and thinking that is brutal and horrible. And that's where you've got to go hard.
And
I was just going to say, so having an open relationship, what you really want is to be astute to your child's moods and the way they are. You notice. Parents notice. You've got, you know, you've got that capacity to kind of go, they're a bit quiet.
Yeah.
They're not eating. They don't want to go to school, or they don't want to go to youth group, or they don't want to go to scouts, or they don't want to play sport anymore.
Mm.
What's going on?
Yeah, agree.
And trying to sort of get in behind that and say, you know, I've just noticed you're a bit out of sorts at the moment.
Yeah, that's really good.
Anything, you know, you want to talk about?
So much of it is about communication.
Yeah.
So much of it is about the relationship you have with your kids. Because if you have a good relationship and you've worked really hard on that, and we as adults have to do the hard work, when the kids lose it as a teenager, we don't wait for them to come back to us and apologise.
Yeah.
We have to go and chase them.
Yeah, right.
And so when they lose it, we just want to have good relationships so we can talk about everything, whether it's bullying or mental health or social media issues or whatever it might
be. And it's working out where the line is too, because just because somebody comes home and says, oh, such and such was a bit mean to me today and I'm a bit sad, you don't want to parachute in and cause World War III. You want them to learn that they have survived that situation and they're okay. Yeah. That's building resilience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that when things happen to them as teenagers and adults, they've got some capability to cope and not to get knocked down, or to get knocked down but to get back up again and go, that's all right.
That's
okay. Whereas if parents just bury them the whole time, they don't have that chance to kind of, you know, develop those resilient skills.
Yeah, that's great.
But at the same time, there's a line.
There is.
And bullying is horrible. And it's hurtful, and it can really have a terrible impact on people. So we're going to take it seriously.
Mm.
And that means, and first thing you do is kind of like almost a danger assessment. Is my child in danger physically? Are they getting physically hurt?
Yeah.
Are they getting mentally traumatized because there's somebody stacking on them on some sort of social media platform? So a risk assessment.
Yeah, great.
And it may well be that they have the capacity that you encourage them, if safe, to actually stand up to the bully and say, I don't appreciate the way you're speaking to me. I don't like you speaking like that. But that's really hard
for a kid to do.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
I'm glad you say that.
It's really hard.
You can role play it and you can come up with,
but man, in real life.
Yeah, but in real life.
But it depends on the circumstance, because sometimes that person who's bullying doesn't realize the damage that they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Usually they do.
And so there are things you can do for cyberbullying. You have those boundaries around, okay, listen, you're not going to be accessing your phone after dinner.
Yeah.
I want you off those sites. We're going to block those sites. We're getting off, delete that stuff from the phone or block that person.
Yeah.
Because cyberbullies only have power when you actually engage with the platform. If you never looked at your phone, you don't get cyberbullied.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But the other thing, of course, is to work in partnership. If it's a school, and that is a fairly common thing because children spend so much time at school.
Yeah.
Communicating with the right people at school so that they can monitor and step in. And sometimes it can be just there's a disagreement between a couple of kids, or the bully doesn't know the harm they're having.
Yeah.
Or it can be quite disciplinary and saying, listen, your behaviour is way out of line and that's unacceptable here. Mm. We're not going to stand for it. And there will be consequences if you continue in this way.
Yeah.
So actually, you must never be afraid of getting on the blower. And not just for, you know, somebody said a nasty word to my child on the bus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay, we're not going to go World War III on that.
Yeah.
But when they are in danger, when yes. they're getting hurt,
yeah.
Or when they're even sort of close to that, must always partner with the school or with other Absolutely. Adults so that we yeah. can work together in yeah, making
great.
It right.
The school's a great resource.
Yeah, they are.
These people have chosen to hang with teenagers and support them
yeah.
in their teen years. And great. So they're there because they love kids.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah, brilliant. All right, should we finish on some top tips? What do you got?
Ooh.
I'll give you a second. All right, that's
okay.
It.
My top tip. My
okay,
top
give
tip.
Me a couple of your top tips.
Top
what do you
tip reckon? Is never stop learning.
Okay.
So do whatever you can to learn more. We have the wonder weeks when the kids are babies.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's called the wonder years. Well, there is, but that's perhaps not what we're looking towards. But read podcasts, online forums, talk to people, go to the talks when the school's put on talks at school.
Yeah.
Learn as much as you can because it's hard.
Yeah. Give me a specific, like any books you've read yes. that you've loved.
Oh,
or...
gosh. The first book that really impacted me was Boundaries with Kids.
Yep, Boundaries
Dr.
with Kids.
Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend. Only because it helped me think about, as a parent, think about the future. Start with the future in mind and think about everything that I'm doing now. How will it impact my young person in the future?
Yeah.
So if I'm picking up the washing off the floor for them in their room when they're 20, I should have started when they were 5 and got them to help me.
Right.
And then
right,
let yeah. them to, you know, it's, yeah. it's the cause and effect if whatever You're I'm good. Doing is it helping them in the future.
You're good.
But anything helps. I remember walking past a bookstore in an airport and I was telling you earlier, I saw this random book on the shelf that said something like, if you've got a teenager in your house driving you crazy, read this book. And
it, how can you not?
Catchy.
And
catchy.
Any book, because yeah, if you yeah. pick up one thing, that can you can apply in your own family life
yeah, good.
To help you as a parent.
Yeah,
it's all you need. One thing from a video, well, like one that. From a pod, one from thing from a podcast, one thing from a book. Just keep learning, and it doesn't come naturally to most of us to no, parent yeah, teenagers. Yeah. We were kids, we were teenagers, but as you said, Peter, times
yeah.
changed.
Yeah, it's good.
It's really good. Different now.
Yeah,
and I think we need all the help we can get.
Yeah,
partner
I love
with that. School, talk to school.
Yeah. It's good.
Isn't it great those one things? I was to a friend of mine's got three boys, and I said, "How do you talk to you know lads?" And he said, "It took me a long time to figure it out. I asked this one question: What have you been thinking about, or what's on
nice.
Your mind?"
Nice.
And he said that just cuts through all the yeah. stuff. Not how's your day, and it's just yeah. what's on your mind. What have you been thinking about? And he said that's been brilliant. It's those one things, isn't
one
it?
One thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Keep learning.
Top tip. Well, we've covered a few. I think yeah. there's been so many gems from our years of expertise and experience.
No expertise.
And we've covered some things like having a vision,
yeah.
for example, yeah. About communicating, about yeah. starting early, those yeah. sorts of things. But another thing I might throw in is to not to demonize things. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean if you know. You're talking about phones and social media, for example. And if your narrative is that's bad, it's mm-hmm. terrible, it's harmful and hurtful, and we're going to really have barriers around it, it's disingenuous because we know that social media has some great benefits. Mm-hmm. And so keeping a balanced view so that your children see that you have a balanced view about things, you're just mm-hmm. not the naysayer. Or even yeah, parties. Mm-hmm. Parties are awesome.
Yeah,
parties
yeah,
are
yeah.
great. We want to get together with social beings
yeah.
and want to
yeah.
do some fun stuff with friends, yeah. not just demonize like, oh, teenage parties, oh, terrible. Yeah. You know, they have to understand there's a balance. So not yeah. demonizing things
yeah.
and showing your children you have a balanced view about yeah. life is yeah, really good.
Guys, you're amazing. Thanks so much. Let's do it again.
Thank you.
Great fun.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks, Jamie.